Geico makes it easy to get affordable renter's insurance in as little as 90 seconds. That way, you have more energy for harder things, like the laundry. Why is it so difficult to fold clothes? They just end up wrinkly anyway, or on the floor in a pile that just sits there, taunting you. But with renter's insurance through Geico, at least you know that those clothes and the other things you love are covered. Get more with Geico.
We're back! What's up, everybody? Welcome to West Squad Pod, a podcast about WVU football, the Big 12 Conference, holding the rope, spotting the ball, and hot piss. I'm Joel Bracken at WV Stats Guy. He's Jordan Pinto at Game Day Shorts. And this is a big episode. This is the new coach. It's Rich Rodriguez. This pod has only existed as long as the Neil Brown tenure. So much happening. Everyone's chronically online. I've been the last few days. How is your mental well-being, Jordan? Are you how are you hanging?
I'm frayed. Is this our 100th episode?
I think we're over. I think we're
probably over. Okay, I was gonna say, dude, like it would have been fucking poetic if it was our 100th. No, dude, I'm frayed, man. I noticed probably last Thursday that I was like, man, you need to find something to do with yourself because, like, get the hell off Twitter, get the hell off of the message boards. You know, just go outside, nerd. I mean, I mean, Jesus Christ, Joel. Like, what are we supposed to think about this? I mean, you know, I think in times like these, it's important to remember that this program was founded in the modern era on spotting the goddamn ball.
It's true.
It is the rock upon which we built our church. And this was far from my first choice. But I think in a lot of ways it makes sense. I don't know. How do you feel about it?
I think what you said is pretty, rings true. So yeah, I will also admit not my first choice. If you would have asked me a month ago if I wanted Richard, I probably would have given you a more resounding no.
I think we did.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably on tape somewhere that we did. Obviously he's on the upswing again. He just won the conference championship at a school that just went D1. Like a year or two ago. So he's on the upswing again. And, you know, I think for all the hard feelings, neither Rich Rodriguez or West Virginia University football has found quite the same success apart as they did together. You know, I think he has traveled the college football landscape, different positions, pretty much been in every time zone at every level. At a lot of positions, and he has been solid, but he has not found the same success that he did here. And you could say the same thing about our program. We've had some highs, we've had a lot of low to mids, and it's set up for just a crazy, a crazy story of coming back and maybe sort of, you know, fixing, righting the wrongs and exercising the demons and.
I think no matter how you feel about it, like that piece is, there's no other coach who would have given us like that narrative of the unfinished business of we got right to the fucking precipice and then it ended how it did. And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of conflicted feelings here, obviously. You know, I think, you know, polling the group chats that I'm in, I'd say that it's 60-40, 70-30. Are in the absolutely I might never watch a WVU game again kind of, you know, anti-Rich Rod sentiment. And I get it, you know. I mean, December 1st, 2007 is the worst night of my life, and I don't think there's a close second. I don't think there's anything else that even approaches it. That was not only the only home game that I missed that year, it was the only home game that I missed while I was in college. I was at a wedding. And I had to watch it at a wedding, and I borderline, you know, I for my immediate family, I probably did ruin the wedding. I don't think the bridal party cared all that much, but you know, like I caused a minor scene for those in my immediate area when that game went the way that it did. The other side of that coin, though, is that the best years of my life were also that 05, 06, 07, 08. And you know, I mean, there are a lot of cons. There's a lot of red flags with the guy, right? I mean, you mentioned it. Yeah. He's never really hit the highs that he hit while he was here. Mm-hmm. You know, Michigan was kind of a flub. I think if he was not under 500 at Michigan, he was right around it.
I'll get to that in a minute because I was looking back at his coaching record, and I'll say it's better than I remembered.
Same,
but same. The highs were not as high as at West.
No,
Virginia.
Same. Okay, well, so I mean, yeah, I mean, I think I've said my piece. Most of my piece, I guess, from the high level is, you know, it like there's a lot of red flags, but I think on it's impossible to remove the history, but if you're able to, I think on a lot of levels, it makes sense. So. I mean, do you have anything else to add there? Or do you want to kind of get into the justification portion of the podcast?
Yeah, I'll just quickly say that we've mentioned it before on the pod. If you're signing up to care about college sports, you're signing up for just the absolute madness. That is quite enjoyable when you tune in week to week and there's always a good game. And it's always ripping somebody's heartstrings out. I mean, I don't know if you watch the Georgia 6 overtime game or however many overtime game, you know, That's a game that like keeps your team out of the playoff potentially. Like that was not that they haven't won enough, but it's like that was could have been their December 1st, 2007. Yeah. So well. When you sign up for the highs and lows, you got them both from Rich Rod, and you got the extremes on both ends. So I would say the complaint of the Neil Brown era was that it was kind of dull and boring and mid, and I don't think that's going to go that way. So just to catch everyone up, I mean, I'm sure people know this, but, you know, Rich Rod went to West Virginia. He's from the area. He coached there for 7 years. First year was a 3-8 season, and then after that, 8-4 or better in every season, finishing his last three with 10 wins. Went to Michigan for 3 years, 3-9 in the first, 5-7 in the second, 7-6 in the third, was fired. Was trending up, but did not really, you know, do what they need to do at Michigan. Arizona, went to Arizona for 6 years, 8-5, 8-5, 10-4 to start, then 7-6, had a 3-9 season, then 7-6. Went to Jacksonville State while they were D2. They went 9-2, promoted to D1, and then 9-4, 9-4, they won their conference this year. So, as much as we want to sit here and say that Rich Rod has not had the same high level of success at other schools. He had three losing seasons, two at Michigan and one at Arizona since he's been here 17 years ago with a short, I guess, gap between Arizona and Jacksonville State as a head coach. He was like coordinator at several schools like Hawaii, Ole Miss, Louisiana Monroe. But that's the stats piece of it. What do you think about the, you know, so maybe it's a good thing to do it both ways. What's your justification? Why is Rich Rod a good hire? Why is this the right call?
I think we said on the last pod, you know, my 1A in terms of like what I was looking for from the next coach was, you know, not necessarily the anti-Neil, but like it's kind of an intangible. I just wanted somebody who's a little bit of a motherfucker, you know, somebody with a little bit of an edge. And I think I even said on that pod is, you know, I don't necessarily want Rich Rodriguez, but I want somebody who is like that.
We have Rich Rodriguez at home.
we should. Yeah. But, I mean, geez. Fuck. God. My head's in my hands right now. We do. We have him. We have him at home. But I mean, whatever else you want to say about the guy, he checks that box. You know, he's got an edge. He's a little bit of a motherfucker. You know, his teams will not be playing to keep games close, to win by three, to keep it a one score game. And, you know, maybe the margins will swing our way and we can squeak this one out at the end. You know, that's not how he's wired. You saw it in the Conference USA Championship. Guy won 52-15 against Western Kentucky, a team who had beat him the week before. You know, so he's out there swinging. He's out there to beat people. He's not out there, you know, beat people down, not just to beat them, but to beat them down. And then, you know, I think the other piece of it is you know, Jesus Christ, how many times did we hear Neil Brown, you know, we're playing a ranked team or we're playing a quote unquote better team. And well, they got all these NFL guys and, oh, you know, Penn State's got nine NFL guys on defense and, you know, we're going to try our best. Like Rich does not have, like we routinely punched up under Rich Rodriguez. And then we were the big dog and we still punched up. We beat fucking Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. His team, I know he wasn't there, but his team routed Oklahoma in the Fiesta Bowl. You know, so, you know, I think, first of all, the attitude, teams take on the mentality of their head coach. Neil Brown did not have that killer mentality. Rich Rod does. You know, I think that we have seen that. You know, I think the other piece obviously understands the culture and the program. You know, you said from the area, he's a blue collar guy. Think his parents or I'm talking out the side of my face here, but I'm pretty sure his dad was a coal miner. You know, he's like, you know, he's just one of these dudes, gets the area, gets the program, gets the state. And, you know, it's easy to forget this piece of it, but he did not leave because we lost the Pitt game. He lost because the athletic department, or he left because the athletic department was not, you know, building the program in the way that he thought the program, you know, it's like, we're winning all these fucking games on the field. You need to support us off the field. Yep. We need better facilities. We need more financial support. A lot of those issues are no longer issues, right? Like we have very good facilities now. I guess we'll see about the NIL. That's one of the pieces of this where it's like, you know, shit, like, I don't know where you stand on the Wren's hand was forced here a little bit, but you know, if we're making this decision, which clearly we made this decision, like now we need to see the big donors come in who I think probably push this a little bit and support the program in a way where it's like, okay, we're going to be able to get some players. We're going to be able to compete with upper echelon of the Big 12. Maybe not the, you know, maybe not the Blue Bloods, but certainly on par with the teams in our conference.
I think that's part of the package in the hire is that, you know, if you have two guys and they're, you know, you're weighing A and B and Coach A has, you know, guys who are pledging to send millions of excess dollars into the program, you're like, okay, well, is Coach B millions of dollars in NIL money better than Coach? Like that is a factor. And I don't think anyone should pretend like it's not.
No, it has to be. It has to be. You know, for better or worse, it has to be. I mean, you know, more money equals better players equals more wins. It's as simple as that. You know, I think I'm on record for a long time saying that I think that Jimmy's and Joe's greater than X's and O's. And
I mean, ask Neil Brown. I mean, he kept saying you got to have guys.
Well, you know, and sure, fine. I feel like, you know, how many times this year did we say this team was not better than us, but they fucking smoked us. So, that's where the coaching comes in. When talent is equal, coaching makes a difference. And we saw, you know, over 6 years how that played out. But, you know, and then I think finally, you know, you kind of touched on it. there's kind of the narrative that he never hit the highs that he hit from 05 to 07 here after he left. And especially, you know, without Pat White, right? But his record was better than I thought it was, than I remembered it was, you know, some negative propaganda maybe. And the dude can call an offense.
Yep.
I mean, I think there's no question about that. Like you're looking, so I have charted this and I have two series of stats here, from one from myself and then another from my degenerate friend Al, who drinks beers off shovels, among other things. He has other hobbies, but that's probably
what he's known for.
That's probably his main one. You know, other people who have too much time to be doing looking shit like this up. But you know, Arizona. So yeah, you mentioned the wins. His offenses during that time. The only time that he was outside of the top 35 was in 2016 when they won three games. Other than that, it was 15th in scoring, 7th in total offense, 35th in scoring, 31st in total offense, 28th in scoring, 25th in total. You know, so and it just goes down. Even the last year, they won seven games. They were 5th in scoring, 12th in total offense, 3rd in rushing offense. You know, and so it's like, you know, clearly the offense, which he is directly overseeing. Obviously, he's responsible for the whole team. He's the head coach. But the part that he is directly overseeing, not the issue. Even at Michigan, you look, that first year they won three games. They were 99th in scoring, 109th in total offense. Year two, 41st in scoring, 59th in total offense. Year three, 25th in scoring, 8th in total offense. Seven-win team had a top 20 offense in the country, you know? And so, you know, you look at the average, like wins without average wins without Pat White, or sorry, average wins overall, Rich Rod, 7.6 wins a year overall. Wins, not counting the Pat White season, 7.1. Scoring per year, and sorry, this is FBS ranks. Scoring offense, 35th. Scoring without Pat White, 39th. Rushing offense, 15th. Rushing without Pat, 17th. Total offense, 37th. Total without Pat White, 41st. So it's like, it's not like this huge disparity of like, you know, where it was. So that's kind of the one piece. And then the second piece, this is from Al. since 1969, which is when we went to 11 games, WVU has had eight or more wins in 43% of its seasons. And if you prorate that for 12 games, then it's 43%. Rich Rod as a head coach, 63%, eight or more wins. Yep. And remember, only seven of those, less than half of his seasons have been here.
Yep. I mean, he's done it 3 years in a row at Jacksonville State, who, how can you say they aren't punching up? They are a team that just came into FBS 2 years in. 3 years for him in the program, but 2 years up into FBS, won the conference. I mean,
took Arizona to a conference championship. I mean, they lost, but Arizona's not a football school.
Yeah.
He threatened to make them one, but they're a basketball school. You know,
he was eight games over 500 at Arizona with a 3-9 season in there. I mean, that's better than Neil Brown was here. So, yeah.
In the full Pac-12, heat of the Pac-12. Oregon, USC, Washington, you know, all those teams, not peak of their powers, USC, but like, you know.
Yeah. So reasons for, you know, I think you talked about it, just like the general attitude, demeanor, like his teams are going to have an edge. I think X's and O's, very, very valid. I mean, we could have an entire offseason series about the spread and what he did to change college football at the time with the
and it's still working. Still work. Yeah. Jacksonville State was second in rushing this year. They were first in explosive runs.
Yep.
Like, he can still call an offense.
In his most recent head coaching job, Jacksonville State, he's 27-10. Three seasons, nine wins in all three of them. 9-2, 9-4, 9-4. So all those reasons. We talked about NIL, potential backing of people like Pat McAfee is not something I would raise my nose about. That is massive in the world of college football we live in now. You know, Rich Rod could have a segment on the Pat McAfee show once
Tuesday
a week
morning.
Or something.
yeah,
I mean, that's invaluable kind of like level of exposure for your school. Pat McAfee, like having somebody like as a coach who is going to open the door for Pat McAfee to have a pep rally at WVU on ESPN every year or something. If you know things are going well, that I think that's invaluable. So. Lots of good reasons. I mean, nostalgia, I think, is a hell of a drug. So you got to throw that in there. That's a seller. I think people already are. I mean, you're going to hear it a million times, but this Pitt game, it's the same field he last coached, 9/13 on 9/13 is, you know, the date of the game, all that stuff. I'm going to be at that game. There's no way I'm missing that game. And I think a lot of people feel similarly to, you know, just sort of come out. So all that being said, What are your cautions? What are your like yellow to red flags with this hire? Like what in the back of your head is bothering you about it?
I mean, first and foremost, the history, obviously, right? Like the loss on the way out the door and then the way that he left. Yeah. Brutal.
I think absolutely. The way is what stuck with people.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely brutal. Absolutely brutal. You know, and like I said, you know, I don't want to say that I blame him for leaving, but I blame him more for the way that he left.
I think that's,
it's the kind of wound that cuts deep. I mean, shit, like I said, you know, people my age, And I would say that it's probably true across the fan base. I would say, you know, more than half of the fan base is cut deep by this, and it is going to take a serious amount of winning and probably winning early to change that attitude.
What if he issued like an apology? What if he was like, "Hey, I'm here to make things right, and I'm sorry."
I'm sure that is going to be the first paragraph of his first press conference. Here is, I have regrets, and I'm here to make stuff right.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, if it's not, then I'm going to be a little bit fucking pissed off about it.
I mean, I think the difference when somebody says something like that is it's not like he's like Dana Holgorsen, where he is some form of coming outside into West Virginia. He's a West Virginia guy, grew up here, he went here, he's coached here in the best of times.
He knows what it means.
He knows what it means, and he knows what it means to people, and I'm sure he's going to get hell, and I'm sure there are going to be some people who are praying on his downfall and ready, you know, for any loss to jump on it. I'm sure that's part of the gig. I mean, I think he probably understands that, but... yeah, I think what you were saying, though, the way that he left is really what sticks with people. It's not that he left. I think especially in today's age, if a guy leaves for a better job, I don't think people get mad anymore at the same level. But no. It was at the time, the stakes, and then the way sort of thing.
And you know, he had repeatedly said, I don't want to coach anywhere else. You know, all that, of course, all that yeah. stuff. And
he said it last week.
I mean, yeah, it rings hollow these days because, you know, what, but like back then, you know, we fucking believed him because why wouldn't he? He was one of us. He went to fucking school here. He was born here. You know, and so, yeah, it was, I mean, slap in the face doesn't even begin, you know, it was, I mean, one of my group chats, I mean, this is going to get a little graphic, but it was just like, you know, it's like your wife, you have the worst night of your life that your wife is partially responsible for. And she leaves you, you know, after 7 great years, she leaves you for the richer, better looking dude. And then, you know, 17 years of broken relationships and failures and getting kicked to the curb. You find her queen of the slums in the middle of fucking nowhere, Alabama. You miss the good times. So you take her back. And that's what it is, you know, but hey, Joel, we've all seen Hallmark movies. That works out every now and then.
It does. It does work out.
So I don't know. I mean, Ren sat up there last week and was like, integrity is non-negotiable. That's
yeah.
Okay. Right. Like, you know, affairs, not the highest level of integrity. It's not like you got a DUI or, you know, did the shit that Bob Huggins did, right? Like, it's not like you said racist shit on the radio or got a DUI and endangered innocent people's lives. But I wouldn't say he's the best guy. You know, hopefully he's learned from his mistakes. He's 61 now, for fuck's sake. If he's still doing that kind of bullshit, then, you know, what are we doing here? And then, you know, I think you already touched, like, never really hit it big anywhere. I think, you know, who else was going to hire him? I guess we don't know.
It's true.
I guess we don't know. And so maybe the hope there is, you know, he's not in high demand. I know how supply demand curves work. Possibly we get a hometown discount, something to throw a bag at a defensive coordinator so that the issues at Michigan and Arizona don't repeat themselves.
I mean, there were a bajillion fake. I mean, like if you were on West Virginia Twitter, I mean, it was like, 98% of things you were reading were probably untrue over the last couple of days.
But dude, it has been an insane week and a half on West Virginia Twitter.
I've been way too online, and it's just everything is like there are accounts who are just tweeting anything, and then like half the, you know, like boomer aged people are just like, can't believe this is true. Can't believe we're gonna have the highest NIL budget in the conference. It's like, yeah, I don't really believe that. Somebody just tweeted that. Like, but the amount of one thing I saw that was interesting and just as and more like an idea jumping off was like that his contract would be structured where he's not getting an insane raise, but it's highly incentivized for winning, which is obviously what West Virginia fans want. And especially if you, as you were talking about supply demand, if his demand was not high, you know, that is a thing like, hey, we'll bring you to this level and we'll waive the carrot and here's, you know, this is if you get the thing on the tracks again, like this is, you can make the big bucks for sure. So I don't know. Interesting idea. I mean, I think other red flags potentially, like, I don't know what his recruiting numbers have been like. I haven't really looked into that, but you know, if you want to, I don't know. I don't know what kind of level of recruiter he is. And then as the world, college football changes every 6 weeks, it feels like with all the new NIL stuff, like I wonder how much people like are more like our general manager kind of, you know, those positions maybe are more hands-on with recruiting or roster management, because that's just like a whole different element.
You got dudes like, I mean, Trey Nayer, who has been on the you know, the 24/7 podcast here recently, who's our head of recruiting, who apparently played a huge role in the fact that we were able to sign 19 of our 22 commitments.
Which was huge.
Without a fucking head coach.
It's crazy. Right? I mean,
insane.
It's crazy.
So, no, I think it's a huge deal. I mean, you also hear, I don't know if Belichick to UNC is official. Is it official?
It's official, yeah.
Oh, my God.
3 years, $30 million, I think.
Jesus fucking Christ. Okay, anyways, but you hear about the Bible or the manifesto that he handed them, right? Is basically, I'm going to have a coaching staff that I manage, and there is going to be an entire, you know, an entire separate general management team that handles recruiting and players and all this kind of stuff. And like, I'll seal the deal, but they are going to handle the scouting. They are going to handle the approach, all that kind of stuff. And so I think it's, I think it's very similar, you know, here. And the nice thing is that your position coaches, I think, do a lot of that. So I don't know if it's necessarily on Rich. You know, I think if Rich hires position coaches and offensive coordinators and defense coordinators who are good recruiters, then, you know, he has to show up and shake mom's hand and say, you know, we're going to take good care of your son. And
yeah,
you know, that's about it. I don't think head coaches do a lot of direct recruiting.
It's true. No, it's a good point. No, I'd say that was just like a potential, you know, red flag.
Yeah. I mean,
one other one is just like age. I mean, I think that's fair. Like, if you hire a young coach, there's always all this optimism of like, oh, we're going to build a dynasty. And when you build an old coach, it's like, or when you hire an old coach, it's, I feel like a little bit different. Like, not that I feel like you hire a coach with a 10-year plan necessarily in mind, but yeah, just, you know, he's been around the game. That's a pro and a con. The game is more different than it's ever been, especially from the time we had a ton of success. So
I honestly see it as a pro. He's 61. And honestly, you know, I'm saying this half joking, half not. If he leaves again, you know, .. Right. Like, and so I kind of see this as like, I'm coming back. This is going to be my last stop, win, lose, or draw, right?
Yeah.
Because, and you can't say that he doesn't love the grind. And like, you know, there's coaches where it's like you question, like, is their heart really in it?
Yeah, is it?
are they just taking a paycheck? I mean, this dude is grinding at Jacksonville State at the FCS level. Like, his heart is fucking in it, and now he's coming home to where, you know, the history is the history, right? A lot of highs, and then also for, you know, Mountaineer football fans, the lowest low of our lifetime. He is directly responsible for
Low of your lifetime so far, Jordan.
Don't do that. This is a time for optimism. I mean, fuck, it happened. This is like 3 hours old. This is what is it? It's Wednesday night at 10:05 PM right now. We're optimistic. We're choosing to be optimistic. And so, yeah, you know, you know that his heart is going to be in it. His heart is going to be in it, for better or worse. So,
yeah, I mean, I think it's in everyone's best interest, obviously, if this thing goes well. That's a no brainer statement. But like, yeah, he's going to want this thing to go well. This could, you know, fix a lot of things that maybe he has regrets about. And, you know, it could be an amazing story if he gets this team going. What do you think? Do you think there are year one expectations? Do you think, like, I think the Pitt game is important just from a, like,
you know, yeah, I think
mental health aspect of our fan base.
I think there have to be, Yeah, just because of the way it ended last time. So I think, yeah, you know, if he goes 6-6, I don't think people are going to kill him. Because again, you know, we talked about the history. Every place that he's gone,
yeah,
slow starts here, incremental improvements every year. But yeah, he has to beat Pitt. You know, there's things like that where it's just like, you know, there are going to be boxes to check for sure. You know, I've off the top of my head, I don't know our schedule next year.
We go to Ohio.
We have Robert Morris, and then we have Pitt at a conference, right?
And yeah, those are our three out.
3-0 would go a long way.
3-0 gets you moving. Yeah, and then with the conference, I think we have to go to Colorado next year. That's maybe Utah,
probably Arizona State.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think similarly, I think the Pitt game's important. If you go out and win that, man, that just fixes a lot of people's souls that we need it. You know,
it's not for a national championship.
I'm not saying in regards to that. I'm just saying in regards to like the last two losses we've had to them.
Yes.
Just like,
yes. Sure.
Let's just,
especially if you beat them handily. Like I said, you know, I don't think Rich Rod's out there to win by a touchdown.
I mean, what if we spank them at home to start the season and start the second tenure? I mean, that really just gets you fired up and everybody, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
Gets bandwagon rolling. So,
for sure.
You want me to run through a few questions from the chat? I think there's like a few topics in here we can sort of jump off of.
Yeah, sure.
So Shep asks, who are we getting for staff? Obviously this is brand new, not sure. I don't know what kind of baggage he's bringing from Jacksonville State in regards to either staff or players. And then what kind of retention we'd have, or, you know, what staff do we currently have that you think might stick around? I'm really not sure.
So I would think, I think there's probably three locks. I would say he's going to bring Rod Smith with him, because Rod Smith has been with him everywhere. Offensive coordinator, quality control coach, you know, kind of thing. I think he's a quarterback's coach as well. He was a quarterback's coach with him here in 2007, and then he was a quarterback's coach, offensive coordinator with him at Arizona, and he's been quarterback's offensive coordinator at Jacksonville State. So I would be shocked if Rod Smith doesn't come. I would be shocked if Rick Trickett doesn't come, offensive line. Mm. Who, and again, Rick Trickett's old. But for anybody who knows Rick Trickett, he's a sprightly, mean son of a bitch. I think he's probably still got plenty of gas left in the tank, even in his early 70s. And then in terms of retention, I would be shocked if Blaine Stewart doesn't stick around.
Yeah, that's who I was going to. Yep. Those all seem logical. And then I'm sure we'll hear as the days progress other things, but you know, as far as I don't think the university has even officially announced it yet, so as far as that state, that's probably good guesses.
Think defensively, I mean, maybe you make a case for Andrew Jackson, defensive line coach, to stay around. I mean, he's done a good job recruiting, he's done a good job. Yeah. I mean, defensive line has not been the issue,
no,
ever. I don't think Neil Brown, it has been more back end related. So, you know, I think if you're looking around our current staff of, you know, who else has a chance to stick, maybe him. Cause I know obviously Bill Kralavich was a longtime Rich Rod guy. He has retired, really good friends with his son. So, mm-hmm. I don't think he's getting back in the game. So yeah, I don't know about the defensive line coach at Jacksonville State, but I would say Andrew Jackson probably has a chance. Other than that, I wouldn't think anybody.
Yeah. All right. Next question here. Saxo Steve, what do I do if I'm mad about this? I think we have a handful of these. I mean, this is a recurring theme here.
Yeah, no, dude, I really don't know. I mean, you're fully justified. Yeah. You are fully justified to be upset. I mean, it's kind of the same thing that I would have said, like, if you're mad about Neil Brown at the end of his tenure is, you know, you're supporting the program. You're not supporting the coach necessarily. And so may not be happy about the coach, but the dudes who are playing for this team, dudes who have that Dub V on their helmet representing the state, still deserve our support. So I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, similarly. I mean, it's, I'm going to support the team no matter what. I don't think this is a controversial statement, but in the same way that I am an American, no matter who wins the election every 4 years, it's like, yeah, that's not the person I picked, but, you know, like, still a part of this thing. So
it feels like a weird reference to make right now, Joel. You know,
I'm not making any political reference. I'm just saying that, like, you know, if they're not picking the guy you want, I still ride for the program.
I'm
it
still
wasn't
riding.
My number one pick.
No, but I'm 100% with you. It was a good reference. It was a good reference.
All right, next one. WVUIE 97. Have you ever danced with the devil in the pale moonlight?
A couple times. With mixed results.
Master of Awesomeness, what should the expectation for year one be and beyond? How quick do you think we should be contending for the Big 12? Kind of talked about year one. I mean, I think year one, you just want to get off the ground. But I'm not saying you got to be, you know, in the college football playoff. But I mean, yeah, I think the blueprint, as is for most programs, is probably by year two or three, you are at a very serious level competing for your conference. I mean, I think that is like the general blueprint. So yeah, I mean, by year two, you want to at least be in the fight. And then, you know, by year three, you want to be very relevant in the fight. I mean, I think that's beyond reasonable expectations.
Yeah, no, 100% agree. 100% agree. No notes.
I mean, his last 4 years at WVU, he won 3 conference titles in 4 years. So, obviously, different league, different time, all those caveats. But the
coming
dude wins.
A conference title, got Arizona to a conference title within 3 years. Yeah, and I mean, shit, Arizona State went 3-9 last year, and they just won the Big 12. So
that's crazy.
It is shockingly available for us.
Yeah. Hey, this conference was wide open this year. I mean, in a similar stance to how the Big East was at the time, like, there is no, like, juggernaut that is unbeatable. Like, you can get on your feet, and clearly the team that was picked last just won the league. So, it's up for the taking. Zintrady Elite, how short is the leash and or how high should the expectations be in year one? I don't think anything's happening at the end of year one, no matter what. I mean, you don't want to get in the business of jumping coaches too often.
I don't think this is like a forced hand kind of. I'm sure we said it right. The potential NIL backing certainly plays a role, but I cannot imagine Ren Baker, with the way that he has handled himself through, what has it been, 18 months, 2 years?
Been a busy.
Yeah, no, he's, God bless him. Bless his fucking heart. But I cannot imagine him doing something and just being like, okay, you know, I'm going to do this for you, but if it doesn't work out, like, you know, a year one short leash, right? Like, I think you said it. It's like, year one is what it is. Year two, year three, you need to see, okay, we're a serious player in the upper echelon of this league.
Yep.
And if it hasn't happened by then I think you start, you know, year three, year four. It's the same thing we did with Neil Brown. It's just we never pulled the trigger on firing him, and then he won fucking 9 games, so we got a 6-year. You know, it was
he sat in that no man's land where you know he could have teetered either way. And unfortunately you know, fizzled out and kind of teetered.
Yeah, no, but no, I think he gets at least, I'd be shocked if he doesn't get 3 years. It would have to go very poorly if he doesn't get at least 3 years.
It'd have to be catastrophic 2 years.
Yeah.
If he was done in 2 years.
You know, I was like, I will say, like, Rich Rod, you know, I don't know what his ceiling is with us. Mm-hmm. I would like to think it's the conference championship. I would like to think that it's college football playoff berths. But I don't think he lowers the floor.
No, I definitely think the floor is not an issue with him.
The floor is fine. The floor is fine. Like, we are not going to be worse than we were under Neil Brown.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good just general question. It's like, do we come out better next year than we currently are? We can see.
Depends how the portal, the portal goes. I mean, if we get the NIL backing that is being floated around, then
yeah,
you know. So, anyways, go ahead.
Mike Miller, how hot's your piss?
I'll let you take that one.
I said flaming, and I just responded right back to him, flaming
hot.
It's like a flamethrower.
Let's see. I got a fire burning upstairs. It's like red coal hot right now.
Red coal. WV07, how does this affect LeBron's legacy? An actual relevant question this time, I think. LeBron is your poster child for leaving on horrendous terms and coming back and getting the job done.
Wow.
Poster child for it. They burned his jersey on the way out of town, and he came back and won him a championship.
Oh, my God. Validates. LeBron's legacy cemented. Rich Rod's TBD.
Rich Rod is the second LeBron. Confirm. Slaw hits us up. Why does it feel like sloppy seconds?
Because it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there any shame in that game?
Yeah, it's. I like your analogy about the sort of the married couple or whatever. But it is one of those things. It's just like you are tied together. Like, we are tied to this man in the way that he was not getting another Pier 4 offer, but. Sometimes you can't, you know, can't let it go or whatever your analogy is for this. Cause he, I mean, I think also just maybe a good springboard off that is like, okay, so how do you feel in general? We don't know. And Ren's probably not going to tell us, but how do you feel like the coaching search went, that there were like these final days where it was assumed it was Rich Rod, but then the final hour you hear like Brian Hartline's in the mix and like Kodo Nicky, obviously in the mix. I heard, Colin Klein, I heard, you know, what do you think was going on behind closed doors and closed private jets?
My sense is that Rich Rod was there and that Ren was exhausting all options.
Yeah.
Kind of told the donors, like, okay, I get the Rich Rod thing. We can do that, but I am going to exhaust all options first. The only frustrating thing about this is that since Rich Rod has been, quote unquote confirmed, there have been tweets now of Dan Mullen going to fucking UNLV.
Yep.
And that is just like, what the shit? What the shit? That would have been my A1. You know,
his name's floated. I think back when Neil was getting hired, Dan Mullen.
Yeah, Dan Mullen. I mean, this dude had Mississippi fucking State, the number one team in the country. He's sitting there without a job. He was on Pat McAfee's show last goddamn week.
Yeah.
And I don't think we interviewed him. Because, I think publicly he had said that he is not interested and he's having a great time on TV. I'm not interested in getting back into coaching. And so that makes me feel a little bit bad. Makes me feel a little bit bad that, like, he would rather go to UNLV than even interview with us. But you know, the coaching search, you know, I think it was Ren pulling all the strings that he could, doing everything that he could to not hire Rich Rod, but like with the knowledge in the back of his mind that Rich Rod is not the worst candidate, and he is there if we want him. He's there.
Yeah. Yeah, Ren said this too. It's like, it's not his job to hire like the most exciting press release coach. It's his job to hire a guy who's going to win. And for some of those reasons we explained, NIL, Pat McAfee relationship, donor support, fan Pac-Man support.
Jones. Pac-Man Jones said he's going to give, what, 50K for every interception?
He said 100K for any DB who gets at least two interceptions a year. So, I mean, that, I mean, boom, shit. Incentive on the board.
Shit. Come on down. Come on down.
And I think I saw, like, Jacoby Spells was, like, interacting with that tweet. Like, yeah, I mean, those are things that are, like, silly, but, like, invaluable in the landscape we have currently. Like, you know, that might tip the scale for somebody. Somebody want to be the next Pac-Man or the next, hell, Pat McAfee. Or, you know, we've had lots of Noel Devine, obviously.
His kids, where's his kid at school? Hold on.
That's a good question, because he is around that age.
He's I think he was at Jacksonville State. Mm-hmm. He is at Jacksonville State.
Might need a look.
I mean, if we're going full fucking nostalgia spirit bomb,
get the glossy helmets out.
Get the glossy Divine helmets
on the back of the jersey.
Get a Divine in here. Get Rick Trickett. Get the whole fucking Trickett clan. Actually, get Chance. Get
we'll have a Stewart on the coaching staff.
Get Clint. Huh?
And we'll have a Stewart on the coaching staff.
We'll have a Stewart on the coaching staff. I think there's a Castile Jr. floating around somewhere.
The gang's all
run the whole damn thing back. Yep. Mike Lorello, secondary coach. Let's go.
I'm gonna wrap up questions here. Dr. Feelgood just sent us a gift that's saying why. Braden J 713, another why. Knight 676, friend of the pod, how does this look for our university to go to a retread Diet Petrino?
I don't think he's Diet Petrino.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've weighed the pros and cons. We've talked both ways. I mean,
is he Diet Petrino? Didn't we beat Louisville more than they beat us?
I feel like we definitely beat Louisville more than they beat us.
Diet Petrino. Weird. You know. Anyways, why? We've weighed pros and cons. I mean, yeah, you know.
Yeah. Damien hits us with, how hot is your piss? And is there any reason to believe Renz wasn't forced into this?
Yeah, because I think, again, like I said, I mean, it's impossible to remove the context and the history. But if you do, then he checks a lot of the boxes that I would have had. You know, he has the edge. He can call an offense. He has an identity. He gets the culture. You know, and he wins. He fucking wins. I mean, what did I say? 63% of his seasons as a head coach, he has won more than 8 games.
Yeah.
West Virginia historically, again, 43%.
Neil Brown at West Virginia, 17%.
One goddamn time.
Yeah.
One time.
So, last question we got here is new name, who dis? Now that it's apparently 2005 again and I'm 21 and single, what can I do to have more success with the ladies? I've already tried double popping the collars on my shirt and applied 3 layers of Axe body spray. Take her to the old Golden Blue. It's the best show in town if it's 05 again.
It's about to be. It's about to be. Yeah, man. If yeah, speaking personally, I mean, if you can't learn from your past transgressions and do something differently, then that's on you. Personal problem.
All right, that's all of our questions. They kind of got buried in the if you're not in the Discord, man, the Discord has been alive and well. It's been fun.
Dude, I got tagged. I got tagged in something today, this evening. And like, I have been active on Discord. I got tagged in something this evening. I could not even find where
we
I was.
We were getting calls for the emergency pod.
I did not even get tagged. Oh, is that what that was?
They lit the beam. They lit the beam. Well, the signals were up. It was
the beacon's here.
Yeah.
Rohan will answer.
And here we are.
Here we are.
Dude, we have a bowl game in a handful of days.
Do you want to
touch on the bowl game real quick? I mean, this is obviously the news of the day and the week, but we're playing a bowl game is what I hear.
I would love to touch on the bowl game, but I have consumed all of the beers that I allocated for myself, and I need to go get like two more.
So okay, I'll give a Memphis right breakdown while you're
Yeah, give the vibes, and then I got some vibe notes, and yeah.
All right. So West Virginia's playing in a bowl game. If you've been on West Virginia Twitter, you might not know because even though bowl games are sort of fading away in relevancy, this one feels like especially just, I don't want to say irrelevant, but just it's not on anyone's radar. Like, we have been consumed with the coaching search. Obviously, we have an interim coach, you know, and there's all kinds of, you know, things with bowls now, opt-outs. And I think to even add on the layer is it's a super early bowl. It's on the 17th of December. I don't know if we've ever played in a bowl game this early. So it is on a Tuesday, 9 o'clock next week. We are playing the Memphis Tigers. They are actually ranked 25th in the country. They're 10-2. And you look at their season, who did they play and who did they beat? Well, not a lot. They beat Florida State, but who didn't? They were 2-10 in the season. So they beat them in the third week of the season. They just got off probably their most impressive win of the year, I think, definitely, against Tulane in their conference championship. No, that's not right. Sorry, not the conference championship. The final game of the season, they beat Tulane 34-24 at Tulane. So big win there. Their two losses are to UTSA, 44-36, and they lost to Navy 56-44. So the two games they lost, the teams combined for 100 points scored on them. So that there's your sort of red flag. But hey, they handled business. Not a super tough schedule, but 10 wins and 2 down. Looking at the team, sort of how they rank up in terms of I always with these, I like looking at the, you know, metrics that are opponent adjusted. So offensively, this year West Virginia was 38th beta rank. Memphis was 40th beta rank. So in a similar range as us, a little more balanced than us. 58th in effective pass and 30th in effective rush. On the defensive side of the ball, not fantastic, but actually better than us. This year we were 103rd beta rank D. They are 82nd. 65th in rush and 88th in pass. So that's sort of the lay of the land on Memphis. I'd be honest, I haven't really looked if they have any like significant opt-outs. That's always a thing, but none that you're seeing. Okay. So what are you thinking about Memphis? Is this where's your energy level in this bowl game? I was explaining as you were collecting beers that this is a game that I can't remember a bowl game that has been less talked about. Like, there's just all the energy is in the coaching search.
Yeah, I think we're the third bowl.
Yeah,
I had to ask people. I was like, "Are we the first one?" Like December 17th. Like that is just insanely early. Yeah, I can't remember ever playing one before like the 23rd.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you know that just tells you. But anyway, yeah, on Memphis. So first of all, have to say I have a little bit of a connection with Memphis, Immaculate Vibes, because I took them to the national championship in the inaugural CFB 25 dynasty season. I won the national championship with Memphis, so I'm intimately familiar with this team. I know their strengths. Oh, I know their weaknesses. I know how they can be beat. Yeah, 10-2. You mentioned they ain't played nobody, Paul.
Nobody.
They ain't played nobody. Strength of schedule, I think the offensive strength of schedule, so the defenses that they faced ranked 120th, and the offenses that their defenses faced ranked 109th. And again, that is strength, that is opponent adjusted. So like this team played one of the worst schedules in G5. I think my note, you know, average margin of victory, 35-22. So they're beating people bad when they beat them. But my first note on them was like, what is their best win? And I think that you're right. I think it's Tulane. But other than that, they didn't beat a good team the whole year. But yeah, you mentioned, I was holding up zero when you were saying I don't know about the opt-outs. I was holding up zero. There's no opt-outs. We're getting the full complement of the team. Everybody's playing, so we're getting the, you know, quote unquote 25th best team in the country. And I am very curious to see how it goes because I think they have an offense that is maybe not a lead in anything, but it is pretty good across the board. And then a defense that I think we can get after. So I'm curious to see how it goes.
Yeah. And then on our opt-out side. So, I mean, we have some injuries, people like Treylon Ray, I think Aubrey Burks, some of those. We have some transfer portal guys like Josiah Trotter, which I think is the most significant by far. And then what do you know about, any potential opt-outs? I mean, somebody like Wyatt Milam, is he playing?
Oh, he's playing. Chad Scott said everybody's playing.
So this will be the – Garrett Green will play, Wyatt Milam. This will be kind of the last – Cole Taylor, you know, last suit up for a lot of guys.
We kind of talked about it after the Texas Tech game. You know, this is the opportunity – to rinse the mouth out a little bit. Obviously that was a full sail ass whipping. If you want to write it, if you want to right the wrong and go out on a good note, this is your chance. And yeah. It seems like everybody wants to take that chance.
Yeah. 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 I think especially with the way the season ended, very underwhelming end. I see you enjoying that trust lager.
I found one.
So on the Memphis like offensive side of the ball, I'm looking at this, it's Action Network, but they have a list of opt-outs for all teams, and the only player they have for Memphis is a potential opt-out is the running back Mario Anderson. I haven't seen anything that he's out, but he's just under potential opt-outs.
That would be huge because he's fucking awesome.
Yeah, he's probably their best offensive player, would you say? Six a carry.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he's one of the three. Yeah.
Yeah. So Mario Anderson Jr. is their main running back. He's getting the majority of the carries, 219 on the year. He's almost up to 1300 yards, 17 touchdowns on the ground, which is a lot. So he's getting in zone like 1.5 times a game, which is pretty significant. And also has two receiving touchdowns as well.
My note on him is he is top 15 in FBS in rushing yards. So you said almost, I think it's like 1293 or something like that. Touchdowns, explosive carries. So 10 plus yard runs, he has 40 of them. And then he's top 25 in missed tackles forced. And he also has 53 targets. I think he's their fourth highest target man. Mm-hmm. As a receiver. So a significant piece of their offense if he's not playing.
Well,
backup's good. Brandon Thomas is the backup. He's good. But Mario Anderson's fucking good.
Yeah, I'm definitely not saying he is not playing. He's just on this potential opt-out. I'm not seeing anything on when I search his name indicating that he's not playing. So he will definitely be a guy to watch. And then when you're looking at a quarterback here, Seth Hennigan, about 65% completion this year, 78 grade on PFF. Pretty nice ratio, touchdowns to interceptions, 23-6. Big time throws to turnover worthy plays, 29-13. I mean, he's had a nice season and, he gets the ball around. They have a handful of receivers that they like to use. Rock Taylor being the heaviest target guy, almost 100 targets on the year. He's caught 62 balls. Demir Blank. you got a pronunciation on this? Blank Gumsey?
That's it.
He's got 5 touchdowns on the year. They have a couple. They have a tight end with 4 touchdowns. They have 2 running backs combined for 6 receiving touchdowns. Actually, they have 2 tight ends for 7 touchdowns. They have a lot of touchdowns through the air, but really spreading the ball around. 9 different dudes have caught a touchdown this year. So definitely not like a single guy you can key in the passing game, it seems.
No, man. Hennigan, 4-year starter at quarterback.
All here.
All at Memphis. Yeah. So he's a 4-year starter. I think came in COVID year, and you know, he's not a run threat really. He's more of your classic, you know, if we're going to use the college, the CFB 25 archetypes, he's more your classic field general. 74% adjusted completions. They've dropped a lot of passes this year. But he's, you know, he's good at pushing it down the field when he does, but I think this is more of a, it's more of a short to intermediate passing game. You know, I think, like 66, like 2/3 of their passes are less than 10 yards. But yeah, you mentioned it, you know, they got Rock Taylor, they got Blumenkasi, Kobe Drake, Anthony Lanfear, all of whom I have fond memories of from my national title run, with Memphis. But it's a good passing game. You know, he in yeah, Hennigan, the 29 big time throws actually ranks second in FBS this year. Wow. So, you know, he
loves hearing that.
Jesus fucking Christ, right? This is my worst night. But he's really good when he pushes down the field. I think he has like a 95 passing grade on throws over 20 yards. He doesn't do it that often, like 15, 16, 17% of the time, something like that. Don't recall exactly offhand, but when he does, it's very effective. It's a good offense, man. They got the good quarterback. They got a 4-year starter quarterback who doesn't put him in bad spots. They got a running back who can run it, who can catch it out of the backfield. They got 4 or 5 good targets. The offensive line is really good. Mm-hmm. Hennigan is one of the lowest pressured quarterbacks in the country, like in terms of like the, you know, percentage of dropbacks where he receives pressure. If you look, I'd say it's arguably the best offensive line in the American Conference. 4 of the 5 starters have 900 plus snaps, and 3 of those 4 guys are grading over 77 per PFF. So, like, I mean, it's a good offense. My note on the offense, this group has been together for a while and is definitely going to give us trouble. The critical stops are going to be critical, right? They're going to move the ball on us. Can we force field goals and not give up touchdowns? They're not amazing in the red zone. They're like in the high 30s or low 40s in terms of like red zone touchdown percentage, which is obviously good, but not elite. And so it's like, can we stand up when they move the ball and get in the in scoring positions on us?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it seems like quarterbacks who are competent at throwing the deep ball is kind of the worst nightmare for this team, but
it's not good. He's good. He's a good player.
You mentioned the short and intermediate passing and also not getting pressured a lot. You know, that makes me think that they're trying to get the ball out quick. I would say if we have a strong suit on defense, it's getting the pressure and sort of that front part of the defense. So yeah, if they neutralize that and just, you know, obviously use us in space, that has been our downfall all year. So the over-under on this game is 58.5, just a number to keep in mind. Memphis is 4.5-point favorites. So what do you think about the Memphis D? I mean, like I said, they're not that great opponent adjusted. The games that they've lost, they've really let the teams run it up. I mean, they have losses this year where they have scored 44 and 36 points. And they were, you know, doesn't work when your opponent's scoring 44 and 56 points. So even in wins, I mean, they beat North Texas allowing 44. They beat, let's see. Yeah, they beat North Texas allowing 44, Charlotte 33-28. I mean, they're going to get your points up, but especially for the opponents that they've played, it seems like there is some flex in their defense. So I don't know. They weren't like too dramatically split in the run versus pass efficiencies. With your expertise on the roster, what's the weak point here on defense?
I think it's the defensive line against the run. As weird as that sounds, because the run defense only allowing 103 yards per game, but if you look, only 2 teams have rushed it more than 35 times against them. One of them was Navy, who ran it for 361, and the other one was North Texas. North Texas ran it 23 times for 208 yards. 32 times for 208 yards. slightly worse average, but still effective. I think the thing that sticks out to me the most about this defense is the turnover margin. They are plus 1.3 turnovers per game, which is third in FBS. They forced 24 takeaways. So we're going to have to, you know, be sure that we're taking care of the ball. But again, you know, I mentioned it earlier. They ain't played nobody. They ain't fucking played nobody, Paul. 109th ranked schedule. 82nd is like an average group of five, like slightly above average group of five defense, right? So, you know, I think we're going to be able to run it against them. And if we are, then the one real red flag for them is the explosive pass rate. 102nd in explosive pass percentage, in terms of, you know, when people are like percentage of passes that go for 20 plus yards. So, you know, I think on paper, it's not the greatest matchup, but when you consider the context and who they played and the fact that Navy ran it for 360 on them and that we're definitely going to run the ball. We've run the ball more than 35 times, 8 out of 12 games. And the only ones we didn't were Albany and I don't have it in front of me, but four times we ran it less than 35 times. And I think two of them, we ran it like 33 or 34. So we're going to run the ball on them, obviously. And it's going to be up to them to stop us. I don't know. Dudes who pop, like, who stands out to you on this defense individually?
I mean, on the spreadsheet view, easy to see Chandler Martin, linebacker,
my guy.
Yeah, I'm sure that's your.
That's who I usered. He's a stud.
Chandler Martin, top snap guy on defense at linebacker. He's also the highest graded player, 80.6. Does pretty fine. Does really good in the run D from his grades. Coverage also above replacement. But yeah, kind of you highlighted. It seems like the more higher graded players are drifting towards the secondary, the D line. Not a ton of guys pop here. Davion Ross, pretty solid grades for a corner. And then Kobe Miner, the other corner, 73 and a 70, rounds up to a 77. So two pretty good corners. So, yeah, I mean, I think just looking at the matchup, feels like this is a run the ball, hold the rope kind of game. You know, so what do you personally like wanting to get out of this bowl? Like what's going to make you feel good, or is this bowl just irrelevant?
A win.
Yeah. I just want to see Garrett Green. I want to see Garrett Green ball out like one more time.
Yeah.
I mean, he great Mountaineer, and it's unfortunate we didn't win more games, but you know, he laid it on the line whenever he was capable of doing it. So,
I would love to see him go nuts, and I think there's going to be every opportunity for him to do so, man. The defensive line, a couple dudes on the interior, okay, but again, they don't play anybody who runs it. Like, I mean, Navy is the only team who probably runs it comparably to we do, and Navy ran for 361. Like, I think we're going to be able to run it. You mentioned the cornerbacks, they're good. You know, I think 104 targets. They've allowed 53% completions, which is really good. 25 forced incompletions. But other than that, there's nobody on this defense who pops. I just beat them. Just beat them.
Let's get a win. And let's
like, the bowl, it is irrelevant. It is irrelevant. But I want to win. I want to win bad.
It's the difference between a winning and losing season.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, when you earn the extra, it is to break the tie. So, let's get on the positive side and let's get things going for a happy and winning 2025.
Woo!
All right. Anything else you want to add on anything going on?
It's not really funny anymore. I don't know what West Virginia as a school ever did to fucking anybody, but the Tucker DeVries indefinite injury thing, where it's just like, I love this basketball team.
Yep.
And now apparently he's just, not there anymore. And you know, he's not our highest scorer or our best rebounder or our best defender, but he's probably our most important player. Just in the fact that he's probably like the second or third best at everything. And now he's just not going to be there for who knows how long. It's not funny anymore. I don't know what the fuck we did. We didn't do anything to anybody, to my knowledge. And this shit keeps fucking happening. And I'm tired of it.
It's a good call out. It's a bummer. I hope it's precautionary and indefinite as like 2 weeks and not like 2 months.
The reports are, Josh in the Discord was saying, you know, oh, his shoulder had the cut marks on it, like the last couple times he's done a press conference. And apparently like his surgery, and I'm not sure if it's something that we did, WVU medicine, or if it's something that happened before he transferred, mm-hmm. but apparently his shoulder surgery was not done correctly. And, you know, he's getting treatment for it all season, and who the fuck knows, man. But anyways, like this team's good. This team's really good. You know, I think a definite NCAA tournament team, and now your best player is just not going to be there. It just fucking sucks. It's just, I don't know what we did to deserve, to deserve it. So.
No, good call. Yeah.
Other than that,
I mean, luckily we have like a nice like 2-3 weeks before of basically chill time before conference play. But yeah, you hope that's an injury that he's not going to miss more than half of conference play, because especially for his senior go around and all that. Yeah, just all around for everybody. Hope he gets healthy and All right. Well, I think we'll call it there. Thank you guys, as always, for listening. Make sure you're in the Discord if you're not already. It has been on fire. I'd say all-time Discord week. Just pure pandemonium. So it's been fun. Good community there, I think.
Yeah, we have a hell of a community. it's a lot of fun.
Great. Yeah. I prefer it to being on Twitter, honestly, at this
point. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah,
because you get Twitter in there anyways. People are always linking shit. So
yeah, all the stuff you want to see is getting linked in there. So yeah, great community. Make sure you join Smoking Musket. Check out smokingmusket.com and check out Unreasonable Doubt to stay up to date with the basketball team as we venture closer to conference play. And I don't know. I guess we'll do some kind of like post bowl thing, I imagine.
Oh yeah.
So we'll be back soon.
We got to talk about how shitty this season was a little bit.
Yeah, we need a
full. Got to get that. Got to get that off my chest a little bit. So
yeah, maybe we'll get Jake on here, and we'll just like last season. And
definitely, definitely get Jake on. If we'd won 10 games, we would have left Jake on the bench.
Yep.
But the fact that we have won 6, possibly 7 games.
Yep.
I'm signaling. I'm calling in the big righty.
I need a round table with him.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, guys. Thanks as always for listening. We will catch you very soon.
All right. Take care, gang.
Homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.